Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free trial. And a great day to you. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. It's episode number 185 for the end of October 2010. It's Halloween. Hopefully you're going to have a great time on this lovely little holiday, giving out little candies and all. I remember about the times when I used to go out there and trick-or-treat and everything was great. And then all of a sudden, do you remember this? There was razors and apples and pins and needles and things, and you had to get your candy x-rayed. Man, that really put a damper on things, didn't it? Mom and Dad were checking all the candy all the time. You couldn't eat the candy when you were out there anymore. And no longer did we have to worry about people hitting us with a sock filled with powder or getting nared with a fire extinguisher. We had to worry about objects in our candy. And who gave out apples anyway? I mean, what kind of a trick-or-treat Halloween thing is that? I mean, that's like somebody giving out crackers or unwrapped Hershey Kisses or something. I mean, there's just a limit of what we should be doing anyway. But the point is, it is that time of year, and I hope you do enjoy that. It's time of year that the leaves start turning up north. I was in Montauk a couple of weeks back. I think I mentioned it. We did some great fishing with some very good friends out on the point. Caught some stripers, some blues. Wow. If you have the opportunity to do that ever in your lifetime towards the end of October, it is totally worth it. It was something that is just amazing to watch the amount of fish that are out there. We got lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about listener questions. I have a pile of them that we're going to answer. We're going to talk about some of the politics that are coming up next week, the QE2, and what the Fed did with sending out questionnaires. We have a great report on broadband we're going to talk about, some stocks to be watching, some things that are happening during earnings season, and I think a question that's on a lot of people's mind, which is, when is this stock market going to stop going up, or when will it break out from its current range? I don't know which one you want to talk about, but I think we have both of those to be answered today in a discussion about what's happening with earnings versus economics. We did see that last week the GDP was out at a 2% first look, and well, that's not exciting. I mean, 2%, that's not what we should be seeing in after recovery, and especially after the recovery that we saw recently from the lows of where we were just a year ago. In other words, we should be in the 4 and 5% range right now. Countries around the world are in the 9% range in Asia, in Latin America, in the 5% range, and actually they have an inflation issue that they're contending with right now in places like Latin America, in India, and in certain areas of Asia as well. But we're sitting here concerned about deflation, which will bring us to our first topic to be discussed. You know, what's going to happen with this QE2? Quantitative easing, printing of money, making gold and commodities move higher, and that's also going to be a part of the same discussion that we have about earnings. So let's talk about this for a second. I know you've been worried about this whole issue of quantitative easing because it's getting, well, obnoxious, the discussion. Between the parade of Fed speakers that we've had over the last couple of weeks, they're in their quiet period right now, to when they're going to actually have their meeting next week and discuss what actually will be done, and the release of those reports and minutes and the idea of what is the bombshell they're going to drop upon us. Everybody's wondering, you know, is this going to create a hyperinflation? Is this going to create additional debt? What is this actually going to do for jobs? The intention of this is to start to boost inflation, or better yet, to fight the deflationary animal that's right there today. We are seeing no real significant uptick to statistical CPI or inflation in any area. But you know what? We all know that we hear company after company talking about raising prices. We know that when we go to the store, it's costing more and more. I was in Publix down here the other day, and a woman was buying food right in front of me, and she checked out it was $340. I said, you know, by the way, how long is that going to last your family? She says, oh, you know, about 4 days. Now, do you remember when it was like $100? Of course. I mean, these are ridiculous questions. We remember back when it was a nickel for a pretzel and 5 cents for a Coke, and, you know, a loaf of bread was 35 cents. But the point is that we are seeing a good amount of commodity inflation, and we're seeing a good amount of food inflation. In fact, one of the biggest components of our inflation metrics right now, or the CPI, is the food inflation, and they're seeing that all over the world. As a matter of fact, China came out with their numbers recently, and the food component was very high in relation to the rest of the inflation numbers that we're showing. Same thing's happening in India. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that there is no inflation? That doesn't mean there is inflation? Well, the Fed is using their metrics and trying to boost inflation for the reason that they believe that if they can stop the deflationary spiral as they see it, people will go in, rush in to buy things because they don't want to miss the boat on it going higher. Think of it like a stock. If you think a stock is going lower, you'll wait, you'll buy it, maybe. If it's going to go higher, maybe you want to get in now before it starts really ramping up in the future. The problem, though, is that when you are seeing that components of this inflation, like food inflation and hard metals and the softs, you see cotton? Cotton hit a high, since the highest level since 1870. That's the year 1870. Sugar is up 50% in the last 3 months. Wheat is up dramatically. Some of this is not only due to the inflationary pressures that are being put upon us by quantitative easing and by floods of money into the market, but also because of natural disasters like we saw in Russia and in Pakistan and in India. Droughts, floods, and fires. A whole gamut of weather ordeals that are going on around the world. Now, what's happening is that we're going to find out what level. Right now, the question is, what does the market expect? Because we know, as good investors, that it's all about expectations. So what does the market expect right now? Well, we're hearing from Goldman Sachs that they're, I guess, the $2 trillion dollar area of eventual purchases of these treasury bonds. And this QE2 is all about the Fed going in and buying bonds and inflating their balance sheet. By doing so, by purchasing mid to long-term treasuries, the thought is, or at least the thinking that they believe is, that will push down interest rates, flood money into the markets, create inflation, and bring down long-term interest rates so people can have more money to spend via things like housing, which has been on a downward spiral again in terms of pricing. Look at the Case-Shiller and look at the individual components. You'll see that it is not a really great number that we're seeing. The growth is just not there on a regular basis year over year. There is no growth, because people are waiting. Then we have the foreclosure mess, which is a whole different topic to really cover in itself. But that's also creating a lot of people from, they're being hesitant. They're not going into it because they don't know what it is when it comes to buying a house right now. Will there be a lot more foreclosures on the market? Will there not be? Will there be a flood of inventory? Will there not be? Are housing prices going to go up or down? Probability is down because of foreclosures, et cetera, et cetera. So they're trying to really spur on the appetite for investment and in purchases. The problem is you can wave a 2% interest rate under my nose forever, but the fact of the matter is you have to really ignite the interest of the buyer. If there's nothing that I need or want, desire, or looking for from an investment standpoint, it doesn't matter how much you're going to loan money to me for. It just doesn't matter. So the idea of what's happening just right now from the lips of Fed Bernanke, the chief Bernanke, and all of his fellow Fed fellows and women are all talking about on a consistent basis about the need to fight deflation, the need to bring up unemployment. Now, if you could sit there from this discussion and tell me, or any discussion you've heard before, and tell me how lowering interest rates on long-term bonds and buying treasuries will do anything for employment, I'm happy to listen. I think it's the wrong plan. I don't think that there won't be any effect. Already we've seen a dramatic effect with the pricing of things like oil and copper and cotton. We've also seen that the dollar was obliterated. The euro came up, started to turn around a little bit again. But you know what? The overall, the overall effect of this has been that company after company after company that I've listened to conference calls are complaining about headwinds because currency issues. They're talking about input prices are rising dramatically. Not all companies. Some companies have been able to lift their pricing to the consumer, thereby absorbing the net price and keeping their margin straight, and that's really has been rewarded this quarterly earnings season, where 83% of the S&P 500 has the ones that have reported have actually beat EPS. Revenue growth is so-so. The problem is that economics are like, well, confusing right now. We're seeing very slow growth, yet some companies are doing very well. We're seeing high unemployment, yet we're seeing at the same time EPS numbers beat, margins be okay. We're seeing input costs go up because of the inflationary environment that looks to be right around the corner, and at the same time, some companies are able to pass it on. Now, if you don't beat, there's another problem. We're going to talk about that in a second, what's been going on with some of this. So I want you to keep that in the back of your mind. With next week, there is the idea that will be somewhere about $500 billion initial. Last week with Guy Adami, we talked about this, how about 500,000 initial, 500 billion initial spread over a couple of months seems to be a better deal than all at once shock and awe. So that they can remain, well, you know, at least dangling a carrot in front of the markets for some time longer. Because if you think about what they did this week, the Fed sent out an official survey questionnaire to the essentially the market makers, the people who sell the bonds for them, the primary brokers they call them, for the treasuries. And it said, you know, what do you think we should be doing? What do you expect? What do you think the market expectations are? Now, why would they do that? Number one, if they had a plan. And number two, more importantly, why would they do that if they weren't really concerned about market reaction? In other words, if they believe this is the right plan, just do what their plan states. But the fact is they're in uncharted territory and they know it and they've admitted it. If you look at the notes and minutes from their last meeting, they've admitted that they're going to go into this uncharted territory with very unusual and unconventional mechanisms to try to boost demand and boost on the economy. Now, with that in mind, the problem already is that you're sending the survey and the questionnaire out to the ones who will benefit from the transaction. So already there's a conflict of interest there, right? I mean, you know, that's the ultimate. It's like saying to somebody, you know, like, how much should I buy from you? Just tell me the number to the storekeeper. Oh, buy it all, right? So right now we're in this moment of questioning. That's what happened last week where we saw a real concern about that, and the bonds start to get a little shaky, and the dollar start to rise again, because like, wait a minute, why are you asking us, I think, is the question. And the markets are really concerned about that, saying, hey, you know, But then put that aside for a minute, the QE2, you'll watch that next week. We'll talk about that in the following weeks. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of effect. There probably is going to be some disappointment on no matter what happens. Too much? Well, my God, what's wrong with the economy? Too little? Hey, we thought you were going to give us a party. So we'll talk about that over the next few weeks. They can see the repercussions of this and really what's going to be the results in the economic news when it comes to that. But we also have to talk about, I think it's probably essential, the elections that are coming up in the U.S. You know, for all intents and purposes, it looks like the House will probably gain a good, you know, maybe majority of Republicans. The Senate is very questionable. The campaign has cost billions and billions of dollars already. Mudslinging is, well, just part of it, but it seems like mudslinging is the worst I've ever seen it. I say that every single election. But it's the worst I've ever seen it in terms of the bad-mouthing and name-calling and the derogatory comments and the, you know, this one told me to do this, and this one told them to do that, and Meek is being asked to step down. Was it by Clinton? Was it by, you know, Crist? Was, you know, then we had, you know, the situation in Nevada that's getting ugly, in Florida, and New York, and California, and blah, 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 blah. The fact of the matter is, though, that traditionally, this is traditionally a Congress, or, you know, that is somewhat less slanted to one side or the other, oftentimes has a better effect on the markets because there's a much more balanced approach to the goings-on. Now, the question is, if Republicans do get a majority, do they really try to repeal the health care? Do they really try to repeal the financial reform? Do they really try to take back $100 billion in spending on a government and on a governmental level? Well, that would be, to a lot of people, very good. And even if those plans were awful, let's put this out there. What if the plans that were put in place were just really awful? The healthcare was rotten to the core. Financial reform just did the wrong things, gave nobody any kind of real authority, and it's just really bad for America and for capitalism. Let's say that for a second. Now, they're in now, so we kind of know what we have. That's what we are playing in this game right now. Financial reform bill less, because a lot of things in there that really grant authority to create versus actually going ahead and doing anything. So in other words, the financial reform bill is more of a framework. But let's say that, again, that thesis is that both these are rotten. The Republicans come in and start fighting over, let's repeal this, and try to actually repeal this. How do you think that uncertainty plays out when it comes to investors, confidence, and the markets? Right? Oftentimes, it's better to know what you have than worrying about what could be. So, especially when it comes to the healthcare plan, I think, right now. So I think that's going to be a really interesting dynamic to look at in these markets. And I think that right now it's going to shift from a market that is really highly correlated overall to an individual stock picking situation. It's been, for the last couple of months, a highly correlated market, maybe 3 months. It was a stock picking market for a while. It's going back to being a stock picking market. Those that can show good earnings, margin expansion, revenues, et cetera, and that can make it through a variety of different economic and, we'll even say, political conditions. Who would that be? Well, these companies right now are benefiting from the very low cost of borrowing. I mean, you think about it. Apple, IBM, Microsoft, they're going out there and borrowing at 1% or less, and they could do buybacks. They could do acquisitions. They could just retire the current debt they have at much higher levels. Each and every day here, for any of the municipal bonds and bonds that we have for clients, we are getting alerts every single day that companies are looking to tender their bonds. Now, why would they do that? Well, if you were a company and you had a 7% outstanding bond, let's say that was due in 2020, you issued it a few years ago. And now here you are, 2010, and if you issued a new bond, you could do it at, 2-3%. Well, wouldn't it be great if you could issue new bonds at 2-3% and convince people to turn in their 7% bonds and pay them off? Wow, that looks like a good idea to me. Borrow at 2%, clean up your 7%. Right now, there's a net 4%. The question is whether investors are going to do it. For the most part, we take the tender offers and throw them in the garbage unless there's a major premium. Because what they're often doing is probably tendering below market cost, market price. In addition to that, for those clients that we have investments that are fixed income, we like those nice rates of returns of 6 and 7 and 8% tax-free that we got a few years ago. So why should we go out and tender it if we don't have to? Especially if there's no additional incentive in terms of premium. Just to be nice? I'm sorry. This is the deal that we worked out. So be careful if you're receiving any of those tender offers to look carefully at the fine print of what they're really offering and what the alternative is. Because if you did, in fact, do the tender, if you have a situation like this and you take the tender, what are you going to do with the money? Where are you going to put it? That's the biggest question you have to ask yourself. So when we talk about these companies that are actually going out and utilizing this money, let's talk about something like IBM. IBM hitting all-time highs last week, above 143. Now, that's good for the Dow Jones, because it's a Dow Jones industrial average is a price-weighted average, and about 143 is one of the higher prices in the Dow Jones. So you get some nice little bump on the Dow Jones because of that. That's a big part of that. They announced a $10 billion Remember the billions and billions and billions that who said that? That was on what's his name? You know me with the names. Anyway, now it'd be trillions and trillions and trillions. But they did a $10 billion share buyback. I think is probably the biggest I've ever heard of. It's like buying a small company without any kind of due diligence required, right? They're buying back shares of the company. IBM, we did a price targeting on this, and we think that just this $10 billion buyback, just by the nature of the buyback itself, when they retire shares and what does it add to the EPS, et cetera, by doing so and having less shares outstanding and blah, 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 is $150, $149 change. Right off the bat, just because they're doing this. This is one of the larger holdings in our portfolios right now and has been for a while. But this is the things that they're doing. They're doing buybacks. They're issuing dividends because they can do so, and the buybacks and the dividends together are net zero for the company usually. And this is what is happening, the beneficiary of this low interest rate environment and the beneficiary of the, well, the QE type of movements by the Fed, full circle, is really doing wonderful things for some of the larger companies out there. It's really benefiting the domestic companies, domestic companies here, that also trade and do business internationally. Because what happens is that it's just natural that money flows out. A lot of companies here are taking money that they get in from their bonds or, again, from low interest rates, however they get them, and they're going out there, they're cleaning up their balance sheets like we talked about, they're reissuing lower cost debt, doing buybacks, all that, but they're also expanding into cheaper places around the world that have better tax implications on the money. So essentially what's happening is, if you think about this, if IBM opens up a facility, again, it doesn't matter the company, but if IBM opens up a facility, let's say in Thailand or in Vietnam or possibly in some Latin America country, maybe in India, they're going to get labor at a lower cost than the U.S. Maybe the building structure and the pricing of the facility itself costs less, but let's put that aside for a second. Some of the biggest costs for any company is what? The human cost, labor. So let's look at the fact that now this money that they're getting by refinancing, they can utilize to go over and simply buy lower cost employees, if you will, create a much better overhead situation over there, wherever over there is. That's why some of these emerging markets are moving up so dramatically. Because the cash that's being presented and created here is going over there. Interesting, right? Matter of fact, Brazil put a 6% tax on all incoming money into fixed income lately. So while this is going on, this QE, it doesn't necessarily immediately impact us here, but it impacts the rest of the world very dramatically with the low cost. That's why I say it's not going to help our employment situation. It doesn't help us here. We need to do something to stimulate demand here. We need to bring down employee payroll taxes. We need to bring down taxes, give incentives. I would much rather spend $500 billion or $1 trillion giving money to people than buying bonds with it. I just don't get the whole process. Is it less risky? Maybe, because the government can pay it back. You know where it's going, which, then the government spends it and uses it. The fact of the matter is, there's something just not right about the whole plan. Unless we are trying to, as Germany would say, manipulate the dollar lower for our exports, but that still doesn't hold water. The fact is that still doesn't hold water. It just doesn't create any additional employment here because so much of the manufacturing that we do is overseas anyway. So the orders come in here and it goes there. Anyway, you see where I'm going with this. We'll see what happens next week. It'll be a big week. A little disappointing on the Michigan numbers that came out on the sentiment, consumer sentiment. Consumer sentiment's been kind of a little ugly of late and probably due to the unemployment situation. It's not been, not ugly, but it's not been rising. Let's put it that way. We'll see what's happening with QE2. We're going to talk about what happens, of course, and we're going to see what happens with the fallout or fall in or fall up or fall down from the elections next week. And all that's going to kind of come to a head. Love to hear your comments on that. Of course, you could simply write me at any time at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And you know what? If you're looking for somebody to manage your money, by the way, that's what we're here for. We do that all the time. $50,000 minimum, If you like the ideas that we talk about here on DH Unplugged, that's some of the stuff that we have all the time in the portfolio. And we're going to get into a couple of stocks in a moment before we talk about some of the listener questions. All you have to do is go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out our 14-minute virtual tour. The virtual tour will give you all about the details, all about how we do, what we do, why we do, and how we invest in our aggressive, disciplined investor managed growth strategy. And, you know, if you're not sure what's happening with the markets, how to short, how to long, what to do, well, that's what we're here for. Check it out over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And let's get to this discussion about some stocks that we're looking at and talk about what's happening with earnings and this earnings season. Again, as I mentioned, 83% of the S&P 500 stocks have beat estimates. Now, of course, those estimates were lowered a bit, so we can't get all kind of shot up about that. And obviously, if the S&P is going to hit an all-time high in terms of earnings next quarter by all estimates, why isn't the S&P at an all-time high? You have to wonder about that. Something's not right about that, right? Obviously, PE contraction has been dramatic, and it'll probably stay that way because things were a little bit out of hand, a little out of touch. They were a lot higher than they should have been. But if you look at things, there's been a lot of interesting winners over the last couple of weeks in particular that you would have questioned how that could be. Chipotle, for example, symbol CMG, you would think, hey, input prices must be a lot higher. But obviously, this is like the restaurant business in general. Even though they have potentially higher costs, even though they have potentially a drop-off in sales, they know how to manage the process so well and manage their inventory so well on a just-in-time basis, as close as they can to a just-in-time basis, they've done very well. Another company that announced last week, Coinstar, up 24% after their earnings, and they're thinking about getting into the streaming business. We'll see what that does to Netflix. It seems to knock Netflix down for a few days, but then Netflix just gets right up and moves back. We also saw some, we saw Microsoft that actually beat earnings and had a decent quarter, but nobody really cared. The winners that you saw in this quarter, wow, there were some great winners. If there were some losers, wow, they really lost pretty bad. For example, Lubrizol, which we've had and we've had probably close to a 40% profit on, they came out with, they do I guess you could call it additives for primarily the petroleum industry. Other things too, but that's primarily what they do. And they were down about $10 after their earnings came out where they beat, but their margins were a little tight. And on the conference call, which I wrote about for our clients and for my notes here, we talked about they talked about how the input costs were a problem for them. Flowserve, down $15. We don't own them, but $15 on their announcement just the other day. And then you have things like Monster that was up about 24%. And then you have also, we own Coach. You wouldn't think that the high end of the retail space would be doing well. Coach hits numbers, knocks it out of the park, and stocks up about 15% on the day that it comes out and moving up nicely in as well. Baidu also finally broke out of its long time pattern. It would have what was called a 3-week or maybe even a 4-week tight pattern. It broke out, and that was good. It's trading at an all-time high or close to an all-time high by the end of the week, and that looks to continue on the path that they do. And again, Google was good, and we saw the big boys really play it up nicely. There were some definite losers. There were some definite concerning areas in the quarter. We continue to see the problems with the steels, the aluminums. You know, the automakers have been doing good. Some of the airplane industry and airlines have been doing well as well. There's a real... After earnings started coming out, there was just this lackluster movement overall. I think a lot of that was because that right before the earnings season really started and kicked in, prices of stocks started jumping up dramatically due to the quantitative easing that was announced right in the beginning or right at the end of September into October. So I think that was actually 1 month. Take that back a month. Go back 1 month on that. So I think that's really what happened there and what was going on. But there was really, you really should look at how many stocks won and how many stocks lost in this quarter. It was a pretty impressive quarter. Earnings actually did well. We'll see how those are adjusted upwards, if at all. But I'll tell you, we get banged every day with price increases. Apple already beat very nicely, got to an all-time high. Scaled back a little bit because of some margin concern. But at the same time, that margin concern was out there already. We knew about that. So I don't know what the afterthought was on that. So I think there may be some buying opportunity there as they expand into China, et cetera. Well, anyway, so I think you'd look at that. The other thing I wanted to mention to you, there's some shorts that we're looking at, and you have to be careful again with shorts because they're getting squozen a lot of times right now. But we're looking at LM, which is Legg Mason. Legg Mason is, of course, a mutual fund and investment management firm. But, man, do they have outflows. They're primarily in the domestic equity, domestic, we'll call it, investment area. And a lot of the inflows that we're seeing of mutual funds have been in the international area. Legg Mason has been just bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. Last week they came out with it. We hit them on a short right when they hit their broke through their 10-week, and they bounced a little bit off of that. But look at the declining 10-week average. Look at the fundamentals of this company, and I think you would question that. Urban Outfitters, decent fundamentals on the company, but the stock is very much out of favor, starting to break down dramatically, declining, very significantly declining 50-day trend line. And on top of that, they may have the cotton squeeze, or if you will, like the Mr. Whipple with Cottonelle. They have the squeeze when it comes to potentially not being able to pass on the cost factors of higher input prices when it comes to their jeans and their various clothing to the consumer. And finally, we're looking at, I think I talked about this before, Kellogg. Kellogg just really epitomizes all of the problems that we're seeing in the commodity area. It's a slow mover. It has a base that we're going to watch very carefully because it seems to keep on knocking at it on a few times. Every time we get down a little bit below that, you can see there's some support towards, I'm going to look here, about the 48.5 line. There's some support there. So when you look at Kellogg, I think that it really, and they even lowered their numbers, by the way. But again, when you have people just buying the big names just to get in them, not looking at the data, I think they missed this one, and there's a real concern we have with Kellogg. But you know what? Be careful with shorts, of course. You know, you never want to short too hard into a bull market, but if you're getting ready for something to turn a little bit here, there could be some good opportunities in that. All right, so as I mentioned, we have this broadband report. I just got a note that Robert Green, we can actually postpone that till next week, this great report on broadband that he did. Robert Green is a research analyst, formerly did some work with Harvard, works over at for himself as well as over at Briefing.com. He has a report where he put out the National Broadband Plan, the Cloud Computing Spark. Great report, and we're going to talk about that next week on the podcast. How about we get into some listener calls? I think that would be listener questions. I think that would be kind of interesting. So let me see what you have here. I think they're pretty cool. Pete Connor says, "Hey, Andrew, I have a number of knowledgeable people. I have asked a number of knowledgeable people two questions about investing in natural gas. I'm a Canadian and have invested in HNU, the double leverage long on natural gas ETF. I vaguely understand the reason why these ETF gets destroyed with a steep contango in the natural gas market. Anybody looked at UNG lately? I have two questions. What would cause contango to disappear? Will ETF get a big pop even if natural price gas doesn't go up? Indeed, could there be tailwinds on funds like this if the contango simply eases?" Okay, in theory, Pete, in the wonderful world of possibilities, sure, contango could ease. Why would that happen? Well, one of the reasons that would happen is that what would go on would be that no longer would there be the expectation that natural gas prices in the future would be more. Well, that should have eased already. The problem, though, with the natural gas in particular is a double whammy. You have contango, but you have prices going down. So when you get the price roll into the next month, the movement from this month to next month when it comes to the future, it's a double whammy. And we don't see anything that is really good here. You know, you may think about, yes, longing and shorting one or the other. First of all, a single ETF on the natural gas is a disaster. The UNG is one of the largest ETFs out there, and it just keeps on going down and down and down. Could it get a couple point pop here or there? Yeah. Will you ever see, like, from now it's what, 5.25 or 5.40? Would you ever see UNG go back up to, I don't know, $7? It's possible. But I had a conversation last week with someone over at Brigham Exploration, which does a combination of not only natural gas, but natural gas and oil. And they're shutting down their natural gas right now, and or at least slowing it down and actually going into much more of the oil drilling. It's much more profitable for them. So we've tried it. We've gotten burnt a couple of times. We'd rather go into the natural gas producers, drillers, distributors, than into natural gas itself. It seems a little bit difficult. Andy Waldman writes me that he loves the podcast, but a couple of comments at the latest episode. This was a couple of weeks back. First of all, you start the episode and speak about volatility on a lot of our shows. And obviously, you know that volatility is more than a 2-year lows, and market is anything but volatile. I remember a few months back, you thought volatility was relatively cheap and recommended the VIX at 26. It's not 15, so that should tell you the relative low. It's now 15. No, it's about 20, but okay. There was an interesting thing that happened with the VIX. We talked about the VXX as an ETF. He mentioned this, an ETF that you start talking about because it gives your listeners a sense of investor complacency. I think that's right. The VXX is an interesting place to look, and you could watch that. That's the expectation or the fear or complacency expectation index, and that is something really good to be looked at. But at the same time, VXX doesn't exactly track the VIX itself. I would take a look at that. We are very careful on the VIX right now because there is a lot of complacency in the market. It is low, but you'll see just last week, as a matter of fact, we had almost a 1% down movement in the markets, but the VIX moved up 10. So the question remains, is the VIX low or is there just a lack of interest in it right now? That's a really interesting thing to look at. So I don't know if that really gets to the heart of your question, Andy, but we tried. Listen, this is from Brian White. It says, with the news that Apple is developing a phone for the Verizon network, is Verizon worth a look at buying? If so, is this a stock to buy now or closer to the iPhone release date? I guess, Brian, the bottom line is that buy on the news, sell on the buy on the rumor, sell on the news. Right now, the iPad is coming, I think in a couple of days, the iPad is coming to Verizon, and I think that we all agree that the iPhone will be there. It hasn't at least seemed to do a lot for AT&T. Yeah, quite clearly, AT&T lately has been doing well, but so have a lot of dividend-paying stocks, a lot of the core Dow / S&P stocks that are out there that pay high dividends because people are looking for a higher dividend. But will Verizon do well? Depends on the contract and the deal that AT&T puts in. It seems like AT&T is the big loser on the Apple deal. The deal Apple puts in. AT&T is the loser on the Apple deal, and I wonder if Verizon will be also. I also question the churn rate, right? The churn rate. How much of the Verizon phones are not going to be bought or switched over into the Apple iPhone through Verizon? That's an interesting question. And I think the final thing is, does this hurt AT&T? That's really the question. Do you go long Verizon and short AT&T on this? If you're going to do so, it's now. But I'm not saying to do that. But if you do so, it's now because it's before this all happens and comes to true fruition. I think after it, you'll be late in the game. Although, I'm not saying anything bad against Verizon, but your question was specifically related to Verizon and the iPad, iPhone, and directly there. All right, let's see. This one is from Arcadio. He says, love the podcast and the book. By the way, the book is for sale. It's available over at Amazon.com called TheDisciplinedInvestor.com. For like $15, gang, do yourself a favor, pick up a book, go there right now, grab it. It will give you the ins and the outs of just all the things that we talk about and how to implement a lot of things, some of my tools for traders and tips for traders, some of the things that I read, the periodicals, and I think it gives you a real good background and all that. Anyway, thanks so much for that, by the way. Quick question he was asking, how are you looking to play the upcoming drop in the U.S. bond market? I was thinking about shorting some of the long bond ETF funds. Any suggestions? Now, that's a good question. It's more of a statement of fact with a question, right? So let's break this down a little bit. How are you looking to play the upcoming drop in the U.S. bond market? Well, we have to question whether there's going to be a drop. Is there a bubble right now? It surely looks like the Fed is creating unusually high prices for bonds, pushing yields down, and we just talked about the whole QE2 issue. But at the same time, if you are thinking about shorting that, and we are, by the way, we are short the bond market for a small percentage of our portfolio, the long bond market for our trading account, you could use something like TBT or short TLT. Now, you want to think about this. This also, I mentioned this a few times today, but you also may think about this as a buy the rumor, sell the news. So we've already seen that this is probably the worst month for treasuries in a while. Now, why would that be if you have the implicit backing of the Fed coming out of full guns blaring, blazing out and saying, hey, we're buying just an incredible amount of treasuries. They probably dropped off 4% this month. Nice little move if you look at the beginning and over the last 3 or 4 weeks on TBT or shorting TLT. It was a great little move. So the question is, do you want to play with that? And if they do, in fact, come in, I think right now the bond market is pricing in an exceptional amount of QE2 and buying. And even so, if that does happen, isn't there a point that it stops? So I don't disagree with you, Arcadio. I think that it's really something that you could really consider doing. And I would look at possibly a couple things, some specific state municipal ETFs, municipal bond ETFs. We've already seen that a few states like California and who did I recently see? Was it Ohio? They were just a few bonds were being downgraded across the board in the various states. I think you need to look at that. You can look at TLT as an ETF. You can look at shorting that. Or if you can't short and you're in an IRA, let's say, you maybe want to use TBT. Remember, that's a two-time. You have to be careful with that and be aware of what's going on. This question comes from Zach Winston, and he says, Andrew, what are your thoughts on Google and Apple returning cash to shareholders? The debate has recently reared its head again, and just wondering what your thoughts were on the issue. Zach, this debate has been coming up by a lot of mutual fund managers and hedge fund managers and some analysts. They're thinking that the companies that have just a tremendous cash pile, like Apple with 40 plus billion, Google with all that money, and IBM and Microsoft, should return it to shareholders or at least enhance shareholder value. I can't argue with that. There's no way to argue with that. Will Apple actually return and shareholder money in form of a dividend? Are they waiting for acquisitions? I think right now that Apple wants to make sure that they are positioned well for now and into the indefinite and infinite, we'll even say infinite, future. Will they return some money to shareholders? I think it's possible. Will they do it this year? I don't know. If they think that the tax rates are going to go up next year, it's very possible there are going to be a lot of special dividends that are payable this year. And maybe that's what everybody's waiting for, to see what happens after the election and after we finally get some kind of clarification on what's going to happen with the next year's tax code. Will it be rolled back? Will it be enhanced? Will it be only for over $250,000, over $150,000? I mean, what's going to be the case? So I'm not necessarily sure that Google's going to do so. They've been doing a lot of acquisitions and a lot of build-out of their space. Apple may. Microsoft, I think, would rather be on the acquisition trail than returning a lot more. You saw how their last dividend that they put out was kind of weak. So I think it is a good idea. It's possible. I'd rather see share buybacks, but that's me. Because share buybacks can be done to enhance benefit and at the same time can be regulated and they can see what they want to do. On the other hand, when it comes to dividends, one-shot deal, or on an annual basis at least. Next question, Anthony Meliza. Andrew, it would be great if you could address the issue of correlation between the general market and stocks that have nothing to do with the rest of the economy, such as Apple. For example, on October 15th, the market nosedived lower during the day. Yet Apple held up and eventually started breaking out to the upside at 10:30 a.m. The entire NASDAQ held up along with Apple. It was quite strange because everything was weak except Apple and the NASCRAC, he says. while other markets were testing lows from the prior day, NASDAQ remained above its prior day high for most of the sell-off. During the last hour, everything except the NASDAQ and Apple looked weak and vulnerable to a late-day sell-off. And around 3:30, Apple began to rip higher and somehow brought the entire S&P 500 index all to the higher, and it closed near its high for the day. It makes no sense to me that this anomaly in the stocks such as Apple could push every other market to its highs at the very end of the day. The only other indicator that has had a bullish reading was the VIX, which trended lower the rest of the day off the morning sell-off. Yeah, we've been seeing that. We've been seeing a big VIX tick up a lot of times during the morning hours, and then it kind of just slowly fall down by the end of the day, which is the tip-off that obviously the trend is continuing, that if the stocks move up during the day, they kind of move back down. Stocks move down during the day, they move back up towards the end, towards the zero point. It's been a very thin line the last 10 trading days or so with where the stock market is going up or down. Seems to be that exhaustion and waiting for the next catalyst to really do something, which again, I think is going to be next week. But let's talk about this. Let's investigate what you're talking about here. First of all, when it comes to the Qs, not the NASDAQ, the Qs, the NASDAQ 100, Apple is a 20% position in that index. When it comes to the NASDAQ, Apple is a 7% position. Now realize something. The question is, I think you should be asking, what's pushing and pulling who? Is Apple actually pulling up the market, or is the market moving Apple? Now, what I mean by that is, yeah, I think that you can pretty much take over the Dow Jones by playing IBM. If you wanted to really make sure that the Dow stayed up, you could really start ripping into IBM, because if you move IBM up, which does trade a lot of volume and probably wouldn't be the easiest thing to do, but if you have enough money, you could do so. you would get some good movement on the Dow. Now, on the other hand, you get the same thing on the Qs with Apple, and the NASDAQ itself is highly correlated, and Apple is highly correlated with that. Futures are one of the things that are being used right now, leveraged ETFs, and if you think about that for a second, I think that has more to do with the movement rather than just the markets. Because correlation has been high for a while. We talk about it's just starting to break down a little bit. But correlation has been high for a while when it comes to the markets and stocks. That's because, not mysteriously because it's high, is because the units of investment that are being used are things like the futures and ETFs, inverse ETFs, etc. So when you're looking at what went on there, I think it is a combination of the fact that the futures were holding up the markets, and they were particularly holding up the NASDAQ, which therefore overemphasized Apple, because Apple is the largest component of that, let's say, right? And the Qs, etc. But the NASDAQ we're talking about, the other markets don't have as large of an effect on it. It's not as large of a position in that. And basically what you're seeing there is that Apple is having that major effect, and it's affected so much because the futures move. And the futures move ties right back into the rest of the market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Have you ever wondered why the market at the end of the day moves so hard? You think that everybody just jumps on board all of a sudden? Well, it's possible. There's a lot of cleanup and close up towards the end of the day. But better yet, I think it's more appropriate to consider the fact that you have a market that is being moved dramatically. And that's why you see, especially with low volume markets, by the futures market and ETF markets. Yeah, again, you have traders and people that are in and out for the day, and day traders, et cetera, swing traders that are closing up the books on the day to start the next day. But really what you're seeing is the movement of the futures with closing up those positions, because those affect the whole market, not just one stock at a time. So anyway, those are a bunch of the questions that we had. I hope I answered those well. You know, one of the things you could do, by the way, questions about the market, how things work, just the basic fundamentals and thoughts on what is a candle chart, for example, we covered this week, or maybe even simple things like, how do I look at a stock trend? You can check it out over at The Winning Investor. That's another podcast I do once a week over at the Quick and Dirty Tips. You have to search on iTunes for my name, or The Winning Investor. Just search on the internet for The Winning Investor, and you'll find all those podcasts. It's like 5 to 7 minutes a piece, so it's really easy to listen to. You know, you just kind of like pop them in, pop them out, put them on the way to work, or, you know, kind of when you're walking, which I'm not sure if you want to hear my voice the whole time when you're walking, but there's some great tips. We did about 75 of them already. So from very, very basic investing topics, I would really encourage you to check that out. The Winning Investor. It's a Quick and Dirty Tips podcast that I do. And let's see, what else did I want to cover here? I think that kind of wraps up most of the things we want to talk about. Earnings season is wrapping up. Well, we talked about that. Next week is going to be very interesting. Hey, another thing, I do want to ask you a favor for me. I've gotten a lot of emails recently about the whole Android situation. Do me a favor. If you have an Android phone, see if you can actually link up to the Disciplined Investor, and if you can actually subscribe to it, however you usually do that, through your Android phone, and send me an email and tell me how the progress of the process went. You know, tell me if it was difficult, if it was easy, if you could do it at all, if you can listen on your Android phone to the Disciplined Investor, this podcast. I'd really like to know what the experience is like. I know that on the iPhone it's really easy. Obviously through iTunes it's really easy. Through the web it's easy, and other phones. But I've gotten some kind of conflicting discussions from people that have an Android-based phone. So if you let me know about that, I'd really appreciate it. Just write me to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. We have lots more coming up. Like I've mentioned before, we're going to bring back Najarian again. We're going to bring back Robert Green talking next week about the National Broadband Plan. We have on tap for the rest of the year some great analysts, economists, and you're going to hear it all right here on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Tell a friend, leave a review on iTunes for me, and if you want us to take a look at managing your money, please let us do so. I think it's be a really interesting adventure for you, if nothing else. Check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. In the show notes of this show, there'll be a link that you can watch that 14-minute virtual tour. Until next week, let's have a profitable week. Let me hear from you. I enjoy your emails. I'll see you soon. Be safe. Have a great start of a new November. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.